Right, let's do it. Let's do a proper start. So here's how it works. In about 10 seconds, a 40-year-old woman in a black T-shirt and a pair of jeans is going to take three steps, and telling you to go crazy would be a bit odd. But perhaps you've seen me before and you just feel you didn't whoop loud enough, or perhaps you've heard me on the radio and I couldn't hear your appreciation, or perhaps you think it would be weird to start the comedy section without rapturous applause. If so, clap now. Thank you very much. It's really lovely to be here and really lovely to follow such amazing speakers. I'm going to do like the start of my show, The Wrong Sort of Feminist, and that's quite odd because it won't get to the bit at the end where I explain how we can all work together and solve the patriarchy. You'll have to come and see me on tour to get the rest of that. Although I've got some solutions. The whole women in astronomy thing is straightforward, isn't it? It's about represent. It's about, you know, be what you can see, all that business. We've got to just rename the sun the daughter. That one's sorted. You're welcome. It's very. I'm also very interested by the issues around women and medical conditions, this is a little aside that's not from my show. But many years ago, I was on a really shite TV show that you've never seen, and I'm glad because it was awful. Sky Travel Channel made a show called Where in the World, in which me and Ewan McIntosh, who is the guy who plays Fat Keith the accountant in The Office, had to guess where celebrities went on holiday. It was awful. And one of the celebrities that we had to guess where they went on holiday was the radio presenter James Whale, who also is not really famous enough to justify the whole. It's a shambles. The whole thing says budget disaster in such a big way. James Whale showed up, and Ewan and I were having some donuts in the green room. And I'm an idiot, right? I confess I'm an idiot. I did this thing where I shook James Whale's hand, and I had a donut in the other hand. And because I'm an idiot, as I squeezed his hand, I also squeezed the donut. Right. And the jam went all over the floor, and James, I didn't notice, but James Whale noticed, and he grabbed a runner from the TV show, and he went, oh, we need a cloth, right? And I looked at James Whale, I looked at the runner, and then I looked down at the jam on the floor, and I went, oh, I might need a tampon. And James Whale was disgusted. He was horrified. He was like you'd put salt on a snail. He sort of recoiled, and he went, why do women comedians always talk about their periods? And I was really new, and I didn't really know that. I didn't, like, first of all, now I've been in the industry like 12 years. They don't, actually. In fact, they're very afraid of talking about these things in case people like James Whale are horrible to them. But immediately after that, I dropped any material I might have that referenced the existence of my genitals at all. I sort of immediately scrubbed all that, and for years I didn't tell any of those jokes. But recently, I've sort of revived a little story, because I just feel like we should be able to talk about these things, especially WOW Festival. We should totally be able to talk about these things. And it's this. It's about going for a smear test, and most of the people in this room have been for one. So you know what it's like. Guys, if you've not been, basically you're naked from the waist down. You've got your feet up in stirrups, and now hopefully you're at the doctor's. If not, I would argue the cuts have gone too far. And the women in the room know what I'm going to say. The doctor says she's got this horrible metal implement. She says the least useful thing that a human being can say to another human being in that circumstance, which is... Exactly. Well done. She says, "Relax," which is stupid. It's the most unrelaxing situation in the world. So this is what I do. I say, from experience, it helps if you tell me I'm pretty. True story. Anyway, so let's talk about the show. So first of all, I should say this. I'm going to do a little bit of the show. Now, I might be angry. I sort of feel like I should warn you, because if you're a woman and you talk about politics, somebody very quickly says, you'd achieve a great deal more if you weren't quite so angry. Even if you're not angry, actually, it's quite a big deal. Now, first of all, I would like to say that's not true. If the best way to achieve things was by fluttering your eyelashes and being adorable and smiling, then as we all know, Baby Spice would be Prime Minister. She wasn't even on the Labour ticket. She has completely failed to galvanise the hard left. I would rather vote for Sporty. That's true. Secondly, there's a sort of implicit message there that if you're angry, it's bad for you. The sort of inference that maybe you're angry all the time. Maybe this is your, you know, not that you're not angry about one thing, you're just generally angry. And maybe it's bad for you. And yet, like many of you, I experience multiple emotional states. Like when I heard they'd cancelled Top Gear, I was both delighted and warmly aroused. So that's good. Just to prove that I have multiple emotional states, let's see if this works. There we go. Look, there's me having a little happy moment with a baby. Isn't that lovely? Look, little happy. There's me happy with a baby. Actually, a few minutes later, even happier when I ate the baby. So that's nice. Oh, so there's a lot of male comedians who get very angry about stuff. You know, Frankie Boyle and Doug Stanhope. And some of you are thinking, Kate, the show's barely started. You can't go comparing yourself to acts as famous and successful as that. But I'm not saying that I'm as famous or successful as them. You can't deny, though, I am at least as pissed off. So, also, there's a lot to be angry about, isn't there? And I'll give you an example. One thing I'm angry about. I'm angry that, on average, two women a week in Britain are killed by their partner or ex-partner. And I could have chosen a lot of statistics. I'm sure you would agree there's a lot of different statistics out there, some that Finn mentioned as well, that are worth getting angry about. I've picked that one because last year I won an award. Thanks. And thank you. There's a guy who you might have heard of called Mike Buchanan. He's the founder of the UK anti-feminist Justice for Men and Boys political party. And he heard me saying this thing about two women a week. And he's looked at the government data, he's done the research, he's added them up, and he thinks it's closer to 1.5 women a week. Yes, we are literally arguing over half a dead woman. That's how I'm angry about domestic violence. He's angry about rounding errors. And here's the award that he sent me: Lying Feminist of the Month. And I'm quite angry about this for the main reason that's not even me. I mean, here is his attitude towards women. You know, he thinks a generic photo of any woman. This poor woman is probably a model, and technically she wins it every month. And also, finally, I mean, those people saying I should be more smiley and less angry, are you literally my ex-husband? He can also fuck off. So what is this show about? Well, this show, The Wrong Sort of Feminist, it's about a show that didn't happen. And it's interesting because Finn again was talking about different kinds of feminists. And what happened was that this time last year, I was preparing to take my previous show, which I know some of you saw, and thank you, to Goldsmiths College in South London. And the day before the show, they got in touch with me and they said, we're going to have to pull the show. We've heard that there's going to be a protest. And I said, brilliant. Right, I don't know if you know how hard comedians work for a little bit of publicity, but I had a kind of bunch of questions for the protesters. Like, one, could we get their details to my agent? Two, would they like me to pay for a minibus? And three, can I join in, really? They said, no, we're going to have to pull the show. And I mean, I was really annoyed, of course, and I wrote on Facebook how annoyed I was about pulling the show. Obviously, I mean, I've been doing comedy 12 years. I'm friends with quite a few journalists, comedy journalists. And about 2-3 hours later, I noticed on Shortle, comedy website, there was an article, The Wrong Sort of Feminist, Comedian's Show Cancelled Over Student Protests. And there's another comedy website, actually beyond the joke, Comedian's Gig Pulled Over Safety Concerns. And now, I won't lie, I wanted to do the gig at Goldsmiths. It would have been a nice little show. I've played there before. I was looking forward to it. On the other hand, two stories in the comedy press. I mean, I'd have to hire quite a lot of PR agency to get me that sort of coverage. Look, I've had 391 shares on Facebook. I mean, this is... As trades go, right, I'll take it. I'll take it. Okay, two stories in the comedy press, pull my show, fine. I'm happy. But I went to bed going, you know what, I'll call this a win. Well, in the morning, quite excitingly, we're in The Guardian. And The Independent, The Metro, The Times, The Telegraph. And by the end of the week, I think my sort of feminist credentials had reached something of a sort of hiatus when we were in The Sun. And you might be able to see they photoshopped me with Julie Bindle on one shoulder and Jermaine Greer on the other shoulder, which is quite exciting because I think maybe most of us imagine we've got like a little angel on one shoulder and a little devil on the other, kind of going, eat the biscuit. No, don't eat the biscuit, right? I've got two of the world's most outspoken radical feminists. If they gave me any advice, it'd probably go, rip his balls off. You go, yeah, do it. I've done Jermaine with an Australian accent. I'm very attention to detail all the way through. I'm really hoping one day they'll accidentally reuse that photo above an article about the new Sugar Babes lineup. It could happen. But it raises some interesting questions, doesn't it? And the first one is this idea of different kinds of feminists. And it's lovely because we've kind of already started talking about it today. So I'll do a quick run through of what I think are the main different kinds of feminist. And maybe you'll see in there what, you know, what you feel like you are. Obviously, we start with the common feminist, feminist vulgaris. I just spent ages trying to find a feminist, right, that nobody's ever fallen out with, and nobody, you know, no, everyone thinks is great, and of course, right, Joan Jett. Everybody loves Joan Jett. And I could also have used Joan Byers, Joan Armour Trading, or Joan of Arc. Obviously, as well as the common feminist, we've got the feminist of prey. Unlike normal humans, the feminist of prey can actually see discrimination in five colours. Obviously, of course, we've already discussed this, haven't we? We've got the radical feminist. There's no picture, because how dare you objectify her like that? And then people have been asking me for years what sort of feminist I am, and I've always had this really slick answer, right? I've always said I am a unity feminist. Actually, that's actually me at Reclaim the Night. I always say I'm a unity feminist, because I think although we have lots of sort of little disagreements over things, I think ultimately we all want an end to sexual violence, closing the pay gap. And, you know, do you know what I mean? Let's just sort out all the big stuff. And then in the post-patriarchal utopia, we can arm wrestle over what's left over. That's my view. But the trouble is this. I've been calling myself a unity feminist for 10 years, and I think I'm still the only one. And, you know, if it's not helping, if it's not working, let's move on. So I've got a new brand this year. I'm calling myself an open carry feminist. Some of you may feel that that's not an obvious direction for feminism to go in. Open carry, by the way, is a movement in the US, a grassroots movement of people demanding their Second Amendment rights to visibly carry firearms in public. They sort of do things like taking Walmart to court because they were asked to take their Kalashnikov out of the pick and mix aisle. And some of you are thinking, how is this going to work for feminism? Well, I agree, there might be some issues raised. There might be some issues raised, but there's some problems solved. I mean, one problem this would solve is mansplaining, isn't it? And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the term mansplaining. And it happens to women. It happens actually to a lot of other groups as well. My mum's deaf, and so she sort of gets it on a double level. Mansplaining is when people explain simple things to you because they think you're stupid. And I bet it happens in medical circles all the time when you walk in and actually you've got medical qualifications, but they're still going, it's a paracetamol. And you're going, of course it's a bloody paracetamol. That's why I don't want it. I want a drug that works. And I'll give you an example that happened to me quite recently. A friend of mine asked me to look after his dog. And I said, sure. And as he was leaving, he said, this is a great question. He said, are you all right with the poo? And I was like, yeah, I know. I get it, right? Some people are a bit squeamish. I'm not bothered, right? You just get a little plastic bag. Then it's not a problem. And he went, ah, yes. Little bit of advice for you, actually. Put the bag over your hand. Pick up the poo. And then turn the bag inside out. Right, that is wonderful advice, isn't it? But only if you have seriously considered the possibility that I might have attempted any other method whatsoever. Like what? I mean, I suppose there's a sort of scoop and wipe option. There's run round behind the dog and try to catch it. Fasten the bag to the tail. Force the dog to eat the bag and hope it comes out in the right order. My personal favourite, more of a long-term solution, put the dog in the bag, seal it. I love it when people look a bit sad, but when I ate the baby earlier, we were cool with that. I think this is important, actually, and I think it's something we can actually do, you know, like as women as well, is to treat one another, you know, make the assumption that people you speak to are smart, especially women that you work with, to make the assumption that they know what they're talking about and sort of wait to be proved wrong rather than the other way around. I think it's important to do that, to talk to people respectfully, to not to talk down to people. And my capacity for not talking down to people was quite seriously tested in May of last year, when my partner and I appeared on a celebrity episode of Couples Come Dine With Me. And as soon as I was told we were going to be on, all my friends said the same thing. They said, you know, they will put you with people you'll argue with. They said, I bet they'll, because I'm always arguing with religious people on the telly, they said, I bet you'll, they'll put you with some, like, minister or something. They'll put you with someone who's like a super conservative imam or priest or rabbi or something like this. And I said, I won't. I don't usually argue with those people. Do you know what I mean? Like, not in normal life. If that's just their belief, unless they're going to try and convert me, I don't start a row, you know. You know who I argue with a lot more? Those people who say, who are not religious, but they still have some superstitious thing. You know, people who go, well, Catholicism's bollocks. Incidentally, I'm a Pisces. I was in Greece last June, and we arrived, and I think this is the thing, right? I have a hippie limit. Yeah, like, I love a bit of peace and love, and there's like a line, isn't there, where... We were in Greece, and when we arrived, they said there's free yoga on the beach. And I thought, oh, brilliant. That'd be awesome, right? Long journey, get to the beach, stretch, breathe, soak in the last few sun rays of the day. Beautiful. We're having a wonderful, wonderful time. And then halfway through it, the instructor said, now this is an excellent yoga pose for dyslexia. Bang. That's it. That's my hippie limit. Bang. And anyway, if they really want us to have a row over dinner, they'd make me have dinner with my parents. So we got there, and the first couple we met, this young gay couple, they worked for the Terence Higgins Trust campaigning about gay rights in healthcare. And the main surprise for me and James was that we didn't know them already. Exactly the sort of people we hang out with all the time. And we said to them, what would we argue with you guys about? This crazy, trying to set us up for an argument with people we've got so much in common with. And then the four of us walked around the corner, and there was the third couple, and we all went, oh. And here they are. This is Abby Clark from The Only Way is Essex, and her partner, the former West Bromwich Albion midfielder, Rob Davis. But I have to say, we still didn't really argue. We've actually got quite a lot in common. Abby calls herself a feminist. I don't quite know what kind, but she calls herself a feminist. She runs a one-woman business. She's got a makeup range. And Rob is no longer a football player. He works for Abby, helping her to run her business. And I'm a one-woman business taking my shows around the country, and my partner James works for me, helping me run my business, and also does the cooking and the cleaning and the laundry, which means you're probably seeing the first and last feminist comedian you'll ever see performing in a wet T-shirt. We will discuss this no further. We've also got some things we haven't got in common. And I would say the main one is this, is that I am not professionally dim. And that might, I realise that might sound harsh, but let me sort of justify this. Abby Clark is brilliant at it. If there is a camera in the room and it's not pointing at her, she says something so incredibly dim that they turn it around. You are a lovely audience, and I'm very happy to be here, and I'm rather excited about being at the Junction, because it's somewhere that I used to come when I was a kid to see bands and stuff, and it's the sort of like, a part of me is like, oh, look at me at the Junction, and then I looked at the programme they've got at the Junction for upcoming comedy and realised that there weren't any women on the bill, and that I should probably hang on to this opportunity, because it will never happen again. Yes, so I digress and moan, but yes. She's lovely, she's brilliant, but she has never performed to an audience this small. That's just a fact. She is making a lot more money being dim than I am trying to be clever. It's working very well for her. There's obviously a big market for it. And the other thing I have to say is that Abby Clark is also dim when there isn't a camera in the room. Whatever you want to say about her, she is method. And my second favourite thing that she said over 3 days of filming, at one point she said, I don't really like sauce. Just the whole of sauce. The concept of moisture in the vicinity of food. No thanks. My favourite thing that she said, James made a really nice soup, and she said, I've never had soup before. She asked me to explain what soup was, right? And I don't like talking down to people, but does anyone know a way to tell a 24-year-old native English speaker what soup is that also conveys the message, I respect your intellect. And I'm cornered as well, right? I can't just say it's like a big bowl of sauce. It's like runny food, isn't it? It's like runny food. You eat it with a spoon, which is like a webbed fork. I thought James had a bit of a moment. I won't lie. I thought James had a bit of a moment when he came up with the expression hot smoothie. Nice. That is pretty, yeah. Anyway, I have to say, Abby sort of got her revenge. After dinner, we were asked to provide some entertainment. And I said I'd do some stand-up. They said, oh, I've had that before. We've had music before. Everything that we suggested we'd had before. And they spotted a photo on the windowsill. James and I had been at a charity ball with a 20s, 30s theme. And we'd offered to sort of contribute. And we'd ended up doing a sand dance. And a sand dance is a kind of sort of ancient Egyptian-themed comedy dance that was very popular in the 20s and 30s and basically doesn't exist anymore. But because of that, it's a very obscure, weird thing to be doing, and they'd never had it before on Come Dine With Me, and they said, oh, we must, it would be brilliant, please will you do it, please will we do it. So we said we'd do it. This is us doing it. We call ourselves the Camel Toes. And when I said we were going to do a sand dance, I immediately did what I did to you, and I started to explain that it was very popular in the 20s and 30s, doesn't really exist very much anymore, but it was a sort of comedy dance, blah, blah, blah. And Abby Clark jumped in. She went, oh, I love sand dancing. And I said, so just to be clear, soup is a new concept, but sand dancing is old hat. And she said, I've got a degree in cultural dance from a university one assumes that doesn't serve soup. I don't understand. But it was very sweet that she kind of had her revenge on us. And to sort of get to the end of, I'm going to vaguely check my watch because I could do the whole hour show, but we will be here all night and other things have to happen. I can do a little bit more. So I got back to Goldsmiths and I said, look, I don't know what this security thing is. I don't know what the protest is going to be, but let's just do the show anyway. Like, I don't mind if there's a protest. I'm not worried by protesters. I can have a chat with them. I don't think there's going to be thousands. If somebody disagrees with me about something, we can have a chat about it. It's all cool. And they said, no. It's not the protesters that we're worried about. It's you. And I said, look, the open carry thing was a joke. I'm not really doing it. It's not really a thing. And they said that they thought I might breach their safe space policy. And I said, well, send it to me and I'll tell you what I might breach. And they said, no, no one's allowed to see it. It's like playing sort of like social justice obstacle golf, isn't it? It's like, I don't know what the rules are. The feminist may move 3 squares forward and 2 to the right without passing go or collecting any nectar points. If she reaches the far side of the board, she'll be knighted, which of course she rejects, because we all know the honor system is a relic of colonialism. Phelps noted the intersecting nature of oppression. Instead, she becomes a feminist of prey. I don't know the rules. I can't play. But I do get it in a sense, in that I do feel like, and especially post the Goldsmiths thing, people are constantly asking me to talk about the importance of free speech and how awful it is that my free speech was curtailed by not being allowed to speak at Goldsmiths. But I missed out on talking to, a maximum of about 80 students? Since then, I've been in the sun. I mean, I'm pretty sure that whatever I was going to say has reached a much wider audience. And I also feel like my free speech is curtailed much more by the things that I daren't say because I know what the backlash will be on the internet. It would be January of last year, I was on the Big Questions, which you may have seen, a Sunday morning show with Nikki Campbell, where they discuss the big questions, and for some reason the big questions are always about religion, which is kind of odd, because I just think there's only one big question about religion, and the answer is no. Now, I was on there and we were having a discussion about gender equality. There was a woman on who was a single mother and was talking about her experience of discrimination. And while she was saying what she wanted to say, a very posh man interrupted her with the expression, "Listen, darling." And, you know, okay, I think there's a right time to call someone darling, for example, during full penetrative intercourse. And there's a wrong time, such as when you don't know them and you're in a live televised debate about gender equality. I think that should be quite obvious. As soon as I'd said this, I felt my phone buzz, and I thought, that taxi is really early. And then it buzzed again and again, and I thought, why is it doing that? And what I didn't realize was the guy I'd interrupted is kind of a part of an online internet troll army, shall we say, for want of a better expression, and I had kind of kicked a hornet's nest, and I was starting to get this enormous amount of internet abuse, and to be honest, I still get it. Over the first 48 hours, well, what I thought I would do is for the first 48 hours after this show, I'd paste all the Twitter abuse I got into a Word document, I'd print it out and laminate it, and then I'd go over and I'd get it out at this point in the show, and we'd unroll it, and then you in the middle, you'd be like, oh gosh, don't worry, I'll help, I'll pass it back, and you'd have to lean forward, and then the guy with the camera right at the back would go, oh gosh, sorry, let's just, okay, and we'd roll it out, and we'd go, oh my goodness, isn't this disgusting, and then there was a flaw in that plan, because I hit the print button, and it turned out that my 48 hours of internet abuse came out at 165 pages. And I think that if you go to the shops and buy a new printer cartridge to print your own abuse, I think you're an enabler. So I haven't printed it, but I've brought a few highlights along, and if there was ever a need to provide a trigger warning, they're pretty horrible, some of these. Trigger warnings is another one of these things like safe spaces. Like, I get it. Like, there's like, I understand. You know, like, the point is, you don't want to get up in the morning and somebody's put a link on the internet that says, look at the kittens, and then when you click on it, it's like a picture of Michael Gove. You don't want that. So that's the point, is to sort of warn you that there's stuff coming up. But I can't help wondering if people who've been very badly affected by gun crime, I mean, what if some of them are upset even by the mention of any component of a firearm? Yeah, you can't give them a trigger warning. Well done, people who guessed that joke before you got there. I'm going to show you some of it. It's not very nice. This is the original guy. If that was the reaction to Darling, I'd hate to see how she'd respond to sugar tits. And that's had 425 favourites, because people can't bother to think of their own abuse. They just have to like other people. Some people have joined in a bit more enthusiastically, though. To be honest, whatever leaks out of those tits would be mighty salty. It's quite helpful in the chip shop, but not much elsewhere. Same old moan, moan, shout and bitterness. Two ears, one mouth. Use them in proportion, please. I just don't understand the please. I guess I just, you know, I sort of want to write back, please stick your noxious misogyny unlubricated into your rectum. If it please you so greatly. The most unfunny comedian in the UK. Seriously, go to some gigs. I don't want to brag. There's some shit out there. I'm sure lots of men watching felt like being violent towards. So this is Claire Corr. She's sort of a known issue. Claire Corr applied to join Mike Buchanan's anti-feminist Justice for Men and Boys political party on the understanding that she would offer to run in a neighbouring constituency and that her manifesto pledge would be that were she elected, she would stand aside and give the job to a man. And even Mike Buchanan told her to fuck off. looks like a male meth addict with grids and behaves like a two-year-old. Yeah, I had to look up grids as well. Incredibly useful phrase. It stands for gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. It's a way of describing HIV and letting everyone in earshot know that you're a massive bigoted asshole. Also, just like point of information, looks like a male meth addict. As it just happens, I look awesome as a bloke. Just happens to be true. We don't hate women, we hate you, Kate, because you are a shitty person, not because you claim to have a vagina. There are a lot of bold claims being made in comedy. There is more than one greatest show on earth. None of the boldest claims in comedy involve me going for a smear test. It's not a thing. And there's a lot of, have you been murdered and or raped? If so, please press one. This person doesn't understand how murder works. Really issuing instructions to those who have been murdered. It's just, there's a logical fallacy in there that makes no sense. And it shouldn't be on Twitter anyway, because his username is I gay raped my son, which shouldn't exist as a bloody username. Now, you are all right to look shocked and disgusted. Absolutely, absolutely. I guess I'm a bit of an optimist. I live through this sort of shit a lot. There is a little bit of good news in here, which is this. At least when he went to get the username, I gay raped my son, he got it. right? I'd be much more upset to receive abuse from my gay-raped my son, UK9. That would indicate there are a lot of people competing for the username. There was only one. He got it. Hopefully he's been dealt with by now, although I suspect, given my experience of reporting this stuff, not much. The only reaction I'd like to see is her coming to terms with an oxygen-free environment. I mention this because Ben Swidick is a columnist for The Telegraph. You would think they could track him down. I thought she was a comedian. You need to be able to take as much shit as you give. No, that is actually cage fighting. Although he's nicked my username, look, Uppercut Fist Wizard. I'm going to be Uppercut Fist Wizard UK9. I'll show you one more. Weirdly, none of this stuff bothers me, right? I have to say, I know, and you know, it might even bother you. That's why I kind of mentioned at the beginning there's some quite nasty stuff here. And you've every right to feel it, and you've every right to feel, as I do, that this stuff shouldn't be out there because it might be sent to people who are really bothered by it. This one really bothers me, and I wish it didn't, but look at this. Why does that bother me so much? I don't know. I'm just a freaking sensitive flower when it comes to photoshopping my head onto hairy men's bodies. It annoys me. If you come to the full length show at the end of the show, I will attempt to deal with that by replacing it with more cheering images. And I'm going to kind of now I have to skip back through my show. Oh, that's good. I haven't really got a holding slide. I really should have a holding slide. That's another part of my show. Yes. Now, let's discuss this. My show after that becomes more kind of convoluted and it folds back on itself so much that I can't do the first half of it without doing the last bit of it, because otherwise it won't make sense, and I'll say the first bit and you'll think I mean it and you won't realise there's a twist at the end. That's the difficulty of doing an abridged and cut up version of the show. But I will tell you this little bit before I go. One thing that Goldsmiths accused me of was failing to be sex positive, right? Which is really weird. It's really weird, this idea that you can only be sex positive or sex negative, that there's just these two things. Do you think sex is A, good, or B? It's not like that, is it? Like, I mean, we've all had the sort of life-affirming, wow, this is great kind of stuff, and then there's the, well, that has scratched an itch. Like, it's quite a kind of a complicated spectrum, actually, arguably, and there's definitely some stuff on that spectrum that I'm not cool with, but doesn't mean I hate all sex. Quite the opposite. The other thing is this, I think I'm quite sex positive, actually. I do a benefit every year for Brooks, which you might know, they run a sex advice helpline for young people. So roughly what would happen, somebody like yourself at the front there, so you'd ring up and you'd go, I've sat on a very moist toilet seat, do you think I'm pregnant? And they'd go, we're glad you rang, we've got a lot to talk about. And they do great stuff, and that makes me sound like a do-gooder. I don't want to sound like that's a sort of humble brag, isn't it? There is a sort of an upside to doing these benefits. They usually give you a little goodie bag, a little prezzy. And this particular gig is sponsored by Love Honey. Right, and some of you know, right? Some of you may have come across their products. Yes. They're Britain's leading online supplier of sex toys. And if you haven't actually bought their stuff, you might also, they've got amazing adverts, late night adverts on ITV where there's a middle-aged couple on the sofa and the bloke goes, we were really pleased with how discreet the packaging was. The neighbours have no idea. You're like, you're on ITV, darling. I think they've probably twigged by now. It's probably the cat is out of the bag. Anyway, so we get goodie bags for doing this gig. We get thank you goodie bags from Love Honey. And it's a bit odd because I think sex toys is one area where I'd rather choose my own, maybe. It's awkward to re-gift. But this is what was in the bag this year, not something I've ever particularly wanted, but the candy G-string. I would say it's never really appealed to me. If there's ever anything going on in this general area, the last thing I want to hear is a crunching noise. But I was quite curious, because this is an edible product and it is available for sale in the UK, and for that reason on the back of the packet is nutritional information. And so I will finish by answering, I think, the obvious questions. It tells you how many calories per 100 grams, and then it tells you how many calories per serving. And then there's only one pair of edible knickers in the packet, and on the back it says, servings per pack, 14.5. Right now, I just, like, let's do the maths. I mean, even supposing you have an incredibly attentive lover who wishes to chew on your pants on a daily basis? Are you really telling me that after a fortnight, you're going to like pop them back in the fridge? Is that... I wouldn't even use them for stock. And that, Abby, is how I make soup. I will leave it there. I would love for you to come and see the whole show or to see me at some other stage. I have a website and a mailing list and all that kind of stuff. And I'm really happy to be a part of this, of the WOW Festival. It's really a fantastic thing. So please keep supporting it. And please get involved as well with lots of the feminist campaigns that you've heard about. There's so much to be achieved. And I think, now, this is not comedy, I'm just being a little bit serious for a second, but like, you know, I mean, Finn talked very movingly about how, you know, there's been a real resurgence in feminism recently, and I absolutely agree, and I think it's fantastic, but I think we shouldn't overlook the fact that there's also been a corresponding backlash against it. And when you see some of the horrific things that I get on the internet, and I'm not the only person in this room who gets this kind of nonsense on the internet, and the kind of reaction that women in fields like, you know, the world of medicine and the world of astronomy, the kind of reaction that women get these days for saying anything, you know, even just something as simple as we need more women in these areas and stuff like this, there is a corresponding backlash against it, and there is a great deal that can be done to deal with that as well. And I would love it if you're all a part of it, and I'm very grateful to have been able to talk to you, and I hope to see you all again sometime soon. Thank you.